Smith isn't one of your wolves, Adam, but he is one of the Marauds.
Would you have avenged me?
Honorata asked Marsilia softly. I might have helped Guccio kill you, she said. We'll never know now.
Honorata laughed.
His plans are like Hydra's, Stefan said, with many tentacles woven together. He doesn't care which path is taken as long as all possible outcomes leave him on top.
He turned to the Fey healer, who had been swinging his hand in hers and looking at a broken table as if it were a Picasso.
Jacopo owes this wolf a big favor, he told her. Would you heal my friend?
She doesn't have much power left, Honorata said, though he didn't really protest. She used a lot for Adam's mate, our little coyote.
It's not a big wound, Stefan answered. It's just in an awkward place.
He brought the healer to Adam and released her, murmuring something in Italian. She nodded, using those awkwardly big movements Adam had seen before. Smith had backed up. Stefan put his hand on the fork.
Brace yourself, wolf, he said.
Adam nodded, and Stefan pulled the silver out of the wound. Almost immediately, the little healer put her hands on Adam's side, and warmth replaced the burning of the silver. A moment or two, and he could breathe again. She staggered a little as she removed her hands. Her skin was paler than it had been a moment before, and he was pretty sure she was thinner, too. She reached up toward his burning shoulder, but he caught her hands before she could touch that one. There had been magic in the dagger, but his wolf assured him that it had only caused the wound to be slow to heal. There was no corruption in it.
Enough, little sister, he told her.
That one won't trouble me much. You fixed the bad one, thank you.
He kissed her hand again because it had seemed to please her so much the first time. Then he leaned down and kissed her cheek.
Be well, he told her.
Niki, called Honorata.
And when a roundish human woman came over to his call, he handed the healer into her care.
Take her to her room, he said. But stop in the kitchen and see if cook has some food for her.
People were moving about the room now, righting tables, cleaning up the glass, and the dead.
Honorata saw Adam look at Guccio's ashes and said in a pained voice, Those plates were 200-year-old Limoges. It will be very expensive to find replacements.
Adam would have said something scathing, but the woman who had led them to their table this morning stopped in front of Honorata and dropped to her knees, spilling the tablecloth she was carrying as she did so.
He wouldn't let us tell, she said in a whisper. I tried to break his hold, master.
Annabelle, Honorata said gently, I know.
She sobbed, shuddering.
You are most gracious.
No, Honorata said, his voice still soft. You misunderstand me, child. I know.
She froze. Honorata sank the dagger that Guccio had been fighting with through her back and into her heart. She fell, hitting the floor as ashes rather than a body. Apparently the dagger was rather more deadly to vampires than it was to werewolves.
Pity, Honorata said. She was useful.
He looked around at his vampires, who were suddenly all actively engaged in whatever work they could find.
I trust that she will be the last I have to put down over this.
Did you see him pick up that dagger?
Asked Smith very quietly.
Adam shook his head, but Larry, who was too far away to hear something that quiet, caught Smith's eye and wandered over.
When he stood nearby, he said,
Elisaveta called it to her and then gave it to Honorata.
Hmm, said Smith.
Adam looked at Elisaveta, who was seated at a table drinking a cup of tea. She met his eyes, smiled, and sipped her tea.
Honorata insisted on traveling with them to Prague. He had still not heard from his man there. Since they were headed that way, it would be only courtesy to allow him to travel with them.
Honorata spent the whole time they traveled in conversation with Marsilia and Stefan. Mostly Marsilia, and it didn't sound like business. The bits and pieces Adam overheard were more like old friends catching up. Adam made sure that the Lord of Night stayed away from Honey. Upon being alerted that
Bonarata was coming. She had dressed in jeans with an oversized baggy shirt that smelled like Smith's. She'd scrubbed her face of makeup. When he'd first seen her new guise, Adam said, "You could wear a bikini and I would not let him touch you?" She smiled grimly.
"I kill the old bastard first, and we still need him alive. So I'll keep out of sight as much as I can."
"And if you kill him, I'll help you bury the ashes and we can blame Guccio," Adam said. Honey grinned at him and held up a fist, which he bumped with his own. But when she made explosive noises and let her fist open and drift down to her side, he just watched. They landed at the field David Christensen had arranged for them. No questions were asked except those pertaining to the care and refueling of the plane. David's contact even provided them with two vans. When Adam asked, Smith and Harris chose to come with them.
"Are you sure?" Adam asked them.
"You don't think Mercy is with Libor," Smith said.
Adam shook his head. "You heard Libor on the phone. Adam had phoned the other Alpha to tell him they were on their way. Libor had merely told Adam his address and hung up. Did that sound like a gleeful, arrogant bastard who has successfully babysat the woman another Alpha managed to lose?"
"And you may need all the people you have," said Harris. "We'll come."
Bonarata had been speaking to Marsilia. He looked at Adam.
"It is nearly dawn," he said. "I had intended to go speak with Kusurik, since he has not seen fit to answer his phone. But people I sent here last night tell me that his seed is abandoned, and has been for a few days. There is no one to question there."
He smiled at Marsilia.
"I did let this go too long. Kusurik was one of Guccio's making. I had forgotten because it was so long ago. But since it is empty, there is time for me to accompany you to Libor's bakery, and I just happen to know the way there. We are old enemies, Libor and I. I can at least spare you the usual trouble when two alphas meet. He'll dislike me more than he dislikes you. I will deal with the vampire issues tomorrow night. If your woman is still not found, I will help you then."
He seemed unworried about the coming dawn. Marsilia and Stefan could teleport. Maybe Bonarata could also. And wasn't that just a lovely thought? Adam called Libor to warn him that he was bringing Bonarata, too. Libor was worryingly nonchalant about the Lord of Night invading his den. The bakery was closed, though it was nearly dawn, as Bonarata had noted. Adam could smell the baked goods the whole quarter of a mile they walked from where they'd had to park the vans. Honey and Smith both looked at Adam as they neared the front door. But Mercy was somewhere else. He couldn't talk to her through their bond, but he could feel it pulling him away. "Let's go see what Libor has done with my wife," he said, and knocked on the door. Since Libor knew they were coming, it didn't take a minute for someone to come to the door. A less dominant wolf, not quite submissive, answered, and he went white when he saw Bonarata. "Libor knows I'm bringing him," said Adam. "Take us on into him, and your part is done." The heart of the building was the kitchen, and that was where the wolf led them. Neither Bonarata nor Stefan and Marsilia had needed an invitation, which was why Adam would never make his pack's home out of a business. The big room was filled with people, mostly wolves, but not all, mixing, rolling, and baking. Huge electric fans in the ceiling sent the warm air on out, but it was still 10 degrees warmer in this room than it had been outside. It might have been full of people, but when the broadly built man stepped out of a storeroom with a 50-pound bag of flour on his shoulder, there was no question who the Alpha was in here. He felt them, too. He looked at them, set the flour down, and strode toward them, wiping his hands on his apron. He took the whole of them in at one glance, his eyes lingering a little here and there. When he took his apron off, the work in the kitchen slowed. He hung it up on a hook on the wall and said, gruffly,
"Get to work! There are hungry people who will be here in a couple of hours, and they expect us to feed them."
He spoke in English, then switched to another tongue and presumably repeated himself. When he finished, his people went back to work, with only a few surreptitious looks at their visitors. He caught the attention of the wolf who'd been their guide.
Go get Martin and Jitka, eh? Bring them to the garden.
Then to Adam and his people, Libor said,
Follow me, gentlemen.
He saw Bonorata and grunted.
And you'll have to let me know how it is that the vampire who is trying to kill your wife is now traveling about with you. Though I know Jacobo Bonorata well enough not to be surprised.
Harris, Smith, and Larry took up the rear. The goblins liked it best when no one noticed them. Smith evidently felt the same. The garden was an unexpectedly beautiful spot of nature in the center of the bakery. Ipultava Alpha walked to the end, then turned and faced them.
I'm Libor of the Ultava, he said.
Adam of the Columbia Basin, Adam responded. Then one by one he introduced his party, though he told Libor who would be coming and why. Since there were so many old beings in the courtyard, he began with the women, starting with Honey, because she was the closest. Mercy would scold him for being old-fashioned.
I have heard of you, Libor told Honey. Peter was a good man, a good werewolf. The world is a darker place without him in it.
Honey blinked more rapidly than usual.
Yes, she said.
Honey killed Lenka, Adam told Libor.
Libor looked at Bonorata with yellow eyes as he said,
Good. This is something that should have been done long ago. When I depart this world, not doing something about Lenka will be part of the cross I will bear on the way to paradise.
He turned, took Honey's hand in his, and kissed it.
If she could, she would, thank you.
Adam moved the introductions along. Bonorata was on his best behavior. But that might not last.
You are Bonorata's blade, Libor said after Adam introduced Marsilia. I have heard many stories enough to make me regret that we never met while you were here.
She nodded gravely.
I've heard stories about you too, Libor. It is probably best that this is our first meeting.
He smiled.
Undoubtedly true, and still...
When Adam introduced Elisaveta, the other wolf smiled with genuine happiness.
Your name is well known, he told her gravely in Russian. And those who speak of you do not exaggerate your beauty.
I have heard your name too. And they who speak of you do not exaggerate your skill at flirtation,
Elisaveta responded. But she was pleased. Adam started on the men, but Libor said,
Jacopo Bonorata and I know each other well. I will have some words for you later about your vampires here in my city, and for this reason... I allow you here in my home.
You will find me eager to listen, said Bonorata.
They exchanged toothy smiles, and Adam continued introductions.
The soldier, said Libor, I have heard stories about you.
Exaggerated, I am afraid, said Stefan. I have heard many things of you also. I would not want you for an enemy.
Libor smiled.
I would agree that it is good not to be enemies, you and I. Though I don't know that we will be friends.
Adam introduced the last three, all at the same time. Libor greeted Harris and Larry and said,
Goblins do not usually interest themselves in the affairs of wolves.
Larry smiled easily. Usually you aren't so entertaining, he said.
And I'm getting paid, said Harris.
When I get paid, I'm always interested.
And Smith, said Libor. His body quiet and his eyes yellow. Smith and I know each other.
There was an edge in the other Alpha's voice. A lot of the old wolves had history. Smith looked at his feet and smiled peacefully.
They needed a co-pilot who could haul around vampires and werewolves, he said.
Harris was fine, but he needed me to help out because the rest of his people are either human or they won't travel with vampires. Libor stared at him for a moment longer, closed his eyes, and heaved a sigh.
It has been a long time, he said.
Then Libor looked at Adam and said,
Your mate brought trouble on her tail.
She usually does, he agreed gravely.
A pair of people came into the garden then.
Let me introduce you to my wolves, Libor said heavily. This is Martin, my second. And Jitka, my third. I'll let them tell you how they lost your mate.
13. Mercy. I am pretty sure that philosophy was first developed by prisoners. Being stuck in a cage, unable to do anything more about my situation, left nothing for me to do but think. One of the things I'd learned on my impromptu trip to Europe was that it didn't matter how frightened I was. If the bad guys didn't show up in a timely manner, eventually boredom set in. There was a kind of special hell dimension that existed only when boredom and terror combined, because numbness never quite settles. I supposed I might die of terror just waiting for something bad to happen if my wait lasted a few hours more. On the other hand, I wasn't alone. The weeping young woman had achieved near-mortal solidity to me. I was studiously trying not to pay attention to her so matters didn't get worse. She didn't seem to mind if I was watching her or not. She spent a lot of time wandering around the room. Then I'd blink, and she'd be right back with me. It took me a while not to be startled when she did that, but eventually I can apparently get used to anything. I felt it when Adam set foot in Prague. He'd been growing closer for a while. I closed my eyes, resting my head on my dead companion's knee. Adam was here. Adam would find me. I could feel the fear and the horror just slide out of me. And then, the whole building shook. I sucked in a breath and hopped to my feet before I realized it wasn't really the building. It was the witchcraft surrounding it that had taken the hit. A second vibration had me panting, because it wasn't a good sensation, for all that it wasn't really physical. The ghost let out a gasping moan and plastered herself against me and dug her fingers into the ruff of fur around my neck, half choking me. We both waited, motionless, for something else to happen. There were about 10 minutes during which nothing happened except that I could hear running footsteps overhead. Then another and another wave. That time the second attack, because it felt like an attack, sent agony shivering through my joints and muscles like a taser. About 5 minutes after that, the door to the basement opened, and 7 people, humans, including the young man who had been down here with Mary, came stumbling and staggering down the stairs. 3 vampires shepherded them down, 2 men and a woman. They steadied the humans when they wobbled, crooning to them to keep them moving, but the people staggered to a stop at the sight of the girl's dead body. Someone hissed impatiently from the top in Czech. So there was a 4th person up there, someone I couldn't see. One of the shepherding vampires, the woman, vaulted off the side of the stairs rather than pushing through the unwilling sheep. She picked the corpse up gently and carried her past the body of the vampire still chained to the wall and set her in the shadows where other corpses, mostly bones, were piled. Then she returned to the stairs, crooning soft words to the humans, standing between them and the corner where she'd put the body. The light wasn't that good. Likely someone who was purely human wouldn't be able to see that corner well enough to know that the girl's body wasn't the only one there. Possibly because I don't know exactly what humans see in the dark, even the dead vampire on the wall was beyond what they could sense. I could have been blindfolded and known there were bodies down here by the smell. But humans don't always pay attention to their noses, and most of the corpses were either done rotting or hadn't yet gotten a good start on it. A skinny and worn-looking middle-aged man tentatively started down the stairs. As he did so, the female vampire said in heavily accented English, "Are you sure this is the best place for them?"
"It will take her a while to look for any of us down here," said the voice of the man who translated for me earlier, Kusurik. I couldn't see him. He was still at the top of the stairs. "See if you can get them to settle in under the stairs, then put them to sleep," he continued. "Smells so bad in here, I don't think she'll know the difference."
I had to agree. It was foul here, and the humans didn't help matters. Hygiene was apparently not something that this seed valued in their sheep. "Should we just kill them?" the female asked, her voice shaking with stress, I thought, though her accent made it difficult to tell. She changed the angle of her face, and I realized she was crying.
"It might come to that," said Kusurik grimly. "Anything would be better. Lars!"
One of the other 2 vampires stepped over and caught a middle-aged woman who had turned to run back up the stairs. He caught her, stared into her eyes a moment. The terror and tension in her body relaxed. He said something soft and sweet to her,
turned her, and kept his hand on her shoulder as he took up the rear position. The third vampire sighed.
Let's get them as safe as we can, people. Dagmar?
Yes, the first vampire said. She had a lantern, and she turned it on. It glowed red rather than white. She set it under the stairs, bathing the area in the gentle glow. From my position, I couldn't see the whole area, but it looked as though the only thing on the dirt floor was dirt, which made it a lot cleaner than most of the rest of the room. She took those seven people one at a time, met their eyes, and caught them in her hunter's magic. But instead of feeding on them, she sent them into the space under the stairs, where they curled up around each other for warmth, and slept. The little man with the mustache, who was the only one whose name I hadn't heard, crawled in with them to tip one woman's head so she didn't snore. He did it with tenderness, and he kissed her cheek. He took the lantern out from under the stairs and left his charges in darkness. There was a click as the overhead light bulb was turned off. Kusurik came down the stairs like a panther, the red light of the lantern allowing me to see them well enough to judge where they were, but not the expressions on their faces. Without speaking, they all took up positions designed to allow them to keep intruders away from under the stairs without shouting to the world, "Hey, I'm protecting the people under the stairs." I got it. What I didn't get was why. Who were they protecting them from? Mary? But that didn't really make sense, because no one had protected that poor girl who died. The double hit on the magic that surrounded this place happened again, and this time I wasn't the only one in the basement who felt it. They staggered under the weight of whatever was bludgeoning the place. During the second attack, Lars, who was neither tall nor blonde, though with a name like that he should have been, went down to one knee. Mustached Man groaned, and Dagmar swore. I thought she swore anyway. There was an emphasis to the words that just translated to swearing in any language. When the second one let up, I shifted to human, startling the ghost, which was a switch. She disappeared for the moment, though I could feel her lingering nearby. "Kusurik," I said quietly, because they'd been trying to be quiet. "How long have you belonged to Mary?" The four vampires did that really chilling thing where they move at the same time. Exactly at the same time. Better than any award-winning dance team. Lars said something. It sounded harsh and staccato, but it was still quiet.
"Mercy Thompson Hauptmann, daughter of the Maroc, wife of the Alpha of the Tri-Cities Washington Pack," said Kusurik. "May I make known to you the few of my seed who are left me. Dagmar, Vanya, and Lars."
"Close," I told him. "I was raised in Brancornick's pack, but he's not my father. And our pack is the Columbia Basin Pack. Werewolf packs are seldom named after a town. How long have you been Mary's minion?"
"Guccio's," corrected Kusurik mildly. "Never Mary's."
"She's not even her own person yet," said Dagmar. "She still needs to feed from us to stay sane. Sort of sane as that witch gets. She's a fledgling yet. And Guccio caters to her for her magic. He set her up here with her own seed made up of his children."
"Pretty vampires?" I said slowly. "The one who looks like he could make a living as a stripper? He's your master?"
"Meka," said Kusurik shortly.
At the same time, Dagmar snickered.
"Pretty vampire? He'd love that. He'd have loved that."
"I thought that master vampires didn't have to obey their makers anymore," I said.
"Why are you answering her questions?" asked Lars.
"Because I think she's the cause of whatever is blasting away at Mary's spellcrafting," Kusurik said shortly.
To me, he said,
"Mostly after we quit feeding from our makers, their influence over us wanes over years. I made a mistake. I welcomed Guccio into my home as a guest, and he caught me and rebonded me, fed from me and made me feed from him. And so he took me and my children. Then he told me to listen to Mary as if she were he."
The rage in his voice, for all that it was quiet, could have ignited diesel fuel. Not much ignites diesel, but it burns pretty well. "For how long?" I asked him. He smiled at me fiercely, the expression big enough I could see it even in the dim light.
2 years, 3 months, 4 days. Once she discovered a way to create new vampires more quickly, he decided to speed up his run to power. and that meant that our seed had to be joined to Mary's. For 2 years and more, I have been his slave again, ending this evening 2 hours ago.
This time they all smiled, but it wasn't that creepy thing where they all did it at the same time. They were alike, but only in determination. What happened then? I asked.
Guccio lost his bid for the Lord of Night's place, I expect, Kusurik said. Someone killed him.
Vampires, I said dryly, are dead already.
Are we? He said. Maybe. Then let us just say that someone destroyed Guccio today, and I and my whole seed walk free.
He looked at his comrades.
There were 18 of us, and the 5 of us who were our own people, we had our households, our humans. When we came here 2 years ago, my seed counted 97. Mary creates vampires quickly, but she destroys at an even greater rate. She is more witch than vampire, and that's why Guccio values her.
He gave a curt nod to the chained vampire.
You saw what she does.
Why are you hiding your sheep from her? I asked. Vanya, the mustache-wearing vampire, jerked his head toward me and growled. Kusurik held up a hand.
These are not sheep, Mercedes. These are the last of our households, the people who served us well and faithfully, only to be turned into, what did you call them? Sheep. Mary's people call them dobitek, fi, cattle. We called them our friends.
Not all of them, said Dagmar pragmatically. We just gathered up the humans and brought them down here. 2 of them are a couple of people Mary collected last week. And why are we telling this to a naked human who is interesting only because she is the wife of an American werewolf, Kusurik?
Because it is good to talk, he said, to remind ourselves of who we are, that we are no longer subservient to Mary, because she is not a human. You must not have observed her change. She is a coyote shapeshifter from America. And because I want her to answer our questions.
It came again, the double strike against Mary's magic, and this time the second strike lasted for a long time, 10 or 20 seconds.
That stings, said Lars on a gasp when it let up.
What do you want to know? I asked. I wiped my nose on my wrist because I thought it was running, but it was blood, not snot. Less embarrassing, maybe, but I would have rathered it was snot. Blood meant these attacks were causing damage. Mary's bit of witchcraft must be drawing power from anyone who had magic inside her sphere of influence. Otherwise, we wouldn't all be feeling it, and the mundane humans not reacting at all.
Coyotes are tricksters, Lars said.
That's not a question, I retorted. But Coyote is a trickster.
You are a death walker, he said, suddenly very interested. One who has power over the dead.
And that right there told me that this vampire from Prague knew as much about what I was as I did, just like the golem had. I didn't say anything. This was bad. This was very bad. Because if he said what I thought he was going to say, it might mean that someone besides Buonarrota was behind my ending up unexpectedly in Prague.
One of your kind came through here during the First World War, Lars said.
Don't tell me, I groaned. His name was Gary Laughing Dog, my very much older half-brother whom I had just met this past winter. Hadn't he said he'd volunteered for the army in World War I?
You know of him? Kusurik said. He caused a lot of trouble here in this town. Afterward, he told me that it was a curse of his to come and make havoc. He said he tried to leave things better than when he came, but he would not answer for the bloodshed, destruction, and mayhem that happened while he was here.
I hate coincidences. I don't really believe in them, less now than before I met Coyote. But what in the world made Coyote care about vampires in Prague? And why would he think I could do anything about them? Probably my being here was just a coincidence, and I was being paranoid.
She can command the dead? Asked Lars. Can she command us? Can you? Asked Kusurik.
I suppose I could have lied, but being raised by werewolves meant I'd never made lying a habit. I don't know, I told him. Maybe. Sometimes. No. I shrugged.
Gary Laughing Dog could, Kusurik said. Scary bastard, said Vanya. I was glad he went back to fighting Germans.
So what did you bring down on Mary's head, Mercedes, who walks with the dead? Kusurik asked.
And then I knew what Coyote might find interesting about Prague, and it wasn't the vampires. Before I had to work up an answer for Kusurik, the upstairs door blew open, and Mary turned on the lights.
Kusurik, she said.
And then she said some other things in another language, stuff that was obviously orders. I didn't think she'd gotten notice that Kusurik wasn't hers to order anymore.
She wants to know where our humans are, Kusurik said. She needs to feed her witchcraft with them so she can withstand the monster at our gates. What did you bring down upon us, Mercy?
It's the golem, I told him. He froze and turned back to me.
The golem?
The golem? Asked Dagmar. Didn't Gary say something about the golem? He was always saying odd things. She frowned, then her face cleared.
I've got it. He said the golem wasn't dead and someone should do something about that.
Lars said.
And he was sure glad his name wasn't someone because that was going to be a messy job.
I remember the golem, said Vanya thoughtfully. I'm not sure that was a good choice, Mercedes Hauptmann. It took the good rabbi 4 days of work to put that thing down, and the rabbi was never the same afterward.
Mary said something sharply.
She wants us to quit speaking English, said Lars. I don't know about the golem. I wasn't here when the golem was active. But I think someone needs to do something about Mary, and I'm willing to be someone today. How about you?
Kusurik said something to Mary in a conciliatory voice. I don't know what it was, but I thought from the tone he decided Lars was right. Instead of hiding their people from her, he was going to lure her down. Witch, I murmured. Witches can kill you from a distance, and they are sneaky. Are you sure you don't? And the golem attacked her spells again. This time, when the first wave hit, I blacked out. When I opened my eyes again, I could tell that I wasn't the only one. Mary had collapsed on the stairs and rolled to the bottom. Lars was flat on his face in the dirt. Dagmar was getting to her feet. Vanya had a hand under Kusurik's elbow, pulling him upright. Mary reached out and wrapped her hand around Lars's wrist. Her voice hoarse. She started chanting. I was pretty sure it was the same thing she'd used before when she tortured the screaming, clanking vampire with her magic. I couldn't understand her, but the rhythm was the same. Stop her, I said as Lars twitched convulsively. And the ghost formed right next to Mary and dug her fingers into Mary's wrist. I don't think Mary saw her, but the ghost's fingernails drew blood as she wrenched at Mary's wrist, breaking her hold on Lars. Mary stopped chanting to say something ugly. She flung her bleeding hand up, and a drop of her blood hit Vanya. It didn't seem possible that she'd done it on purpose, but I could feel the wave of magic that hit Vanya, sending him to the ground with a cry. His skin erupted in reddish bumps with black centers that grew with hideous speed. The little black circles in the center grew too, spreading out and lightening to purple on the edges. He thrashed and twisted, his movements sluggish. My ghost hit Mary on the shoulder with both hands, causing the vampire to stagger. Mary turned to see who had hit her, and I could see by her face that she still couldn't see the ghost. And the golem hit the spells again. Mary screamed in agony, which made my own pain somehow hurt less. She reached out and pulled her magic back from Vanya, who lost his horrible plague-like lumps. I couldn't tell for certain, but it felt as though she was able to pull more magic back than what she'd sent at him. She used that magic to do something that changed the shape of the power of the golem's attack for just a moment, enough to make my ears ring. Then, there was nothing. The golem's attack just stopped. I wondered if she'd destroyed him. Mary rose unsteadily to her feet. She kicked Vanya and spat something at him. Kusurik staggered out of the shadows near the staircase, sword in hand. With a lunge and a twist of his upper torso that would have done credit to Babe Ruth, he cut off her head while she kicked Vanya a second time. We all waited for something to happen. In the movies, when someone killed the spellcaster, all of their spells just go away. There were some magics like that. I'd seen them myself. But according to Elisaveta, If the witch was good enough to set spells that were self-sustaining, then they actually had to be broken. I have to admit, I was waiting for her to get back up and kill us all. Even the ghost seemed to catch the worry. She kept touching Mary's decapitated head and making it roll. The third time she did it, Vanya noticed and rose to his feet with a yelp. "Don't worry," I told him. "It's only a ghost."
"Galina," the ghost told me. "My name is Galina."
And though I knew better, I said, "Galina."
"What?" said Dagmar.
Kusurik said,
"Don't you remember Gary? He always was talking to dead people, and I don't mean vampires. Galina is the ghost."
Galina tried kicking the head this time, and it rolled about 3 feet, coming to rest about 6 inches from Lars.
"Tell her not to do that, please," said Lars.
He was still sitting where he'd fallen, cradling the hand Mary had grabbed against his chest. But I didn't have to, because Mary's head and body collapsed into dust.
"Okay," Lars said. "That works too."
The golem attacked again, and this time it broke Mary's spells. It didn't hurt this time. It didn't hurt me, anyway. The vampires all cried out. It didn't take them long to recover, but by that time the golem was entering the apartment house. He made a lot of noise tearing down the door. "Can everyone see us now? The building, I mean," I asked. I was stuck in the stupid cage and unable to do anything. But if the humans could see us, then soon there would be police and firefighters and all the good people who help others, and they would be coming into a place filled with vampires. Humans could not find out about the vampires. No one sane wanted a panic war where all the supernaturally gifted people, and anyone else who might be thought supernaturally gifted, were killed by their neighbors with whatever weapons they had handy. There was no way something like that would not be a total disaster.
"No," said Dagmar. "I don't think so, anyway. Two different spells. Mary designed it so the veil magic would last a month or two before it faded. She was planning on moving into Kusurik's seed, assuming Guccio killed Buonarrata."
"You gave the golem back its body," said Vanya,
listening, as we all were, to the sound of something very heavy moving over our heads. Then the screaming started. "It won't hurt you," I told him. "You're the good guys." Vanya looked at me.
"We are vampire, Mercy. Not even when the rabbi first gave it life would it have tolerated vampires in its territory. At its end point, not even being Jewish and a decent person was good enough. It will kill us all if it can."
"Dawn is coming," said Lars, who had at last risen to his feet.
"How long do you have?" I asked.
"Not long enough to fight off a golem," said Kusurik. "Assuming we could. Less than 5 minutes."
"Get under the stairs with your people," I told them. "That will keep you out of sight. I'll do my best to keep the golem off you."
"You are in a cage," said Lars. "How is it that you will stop the golem?"
"Can you open it?" I asked, rattling the door a little. Kusurik shook his head.
"Mary spelled that box shut. She was the only one who could open it."
"The golem is only after the bad guys," I said, trying not to hear the screams. "I'll tell him you are the good guys." Kusurik sighed, gave the other vampires a wry smile.
"It has been an adventure, people. I am glad to have served with you."
While he spoke, his vampires had been following my advice. Dagmar said something to him in a language I didn't understand, presumably Czech, but it could have been Serbian. Kusurik laughed, shook his head, and crawled under the stairs with them. They arranged the humans so that they were on the inside, protected by the vampires still. I'd expected them to put the humans on the outside to shield the vampires from the light. But these were the good guys, right? Right. The cries upstairs stopped at the same time the vampires under the stairs died in the dawn. As if in response, the destruction upstairs redoubled. The floor on the side of the basement where Dagmar had carried the girl's body collapsed with a roar of brick, stone, and rubble. Coughing and choking in the resultant dust, I realized that it might all be over, even if the golem didn't find us down here. Light broke through the rubble on the far side of the room in dim rays that illuminated the dust in the air. The dust settled. The sunlight seemed out of place, and I was glad the vampires were under the stairway.
or my saving them from the golem would have been a moot point. After a while, I wondered if the golem, like the vampires, was only active at night, or if it would leave me alone down here. Galena seemed unaffected by the light, which was my experience with ghosts. Most people encountered ghosts at night more often than during the day. I suspected it was because if they see a ghost in the day, they don't recognize what they are seeing. The golem came at last. It ducked through the doorway and started down the stairs. The stairs were sturdy, and they didn't even creak under his weight. He wasn't the biggest monster I've ever seen. He was maybe 8 feet tall and looked like an animated suit of armor made of red clay. His face had no features, no eyes, no mouth. There were also no letters on his forehead for me to erase if I needed to. His magic felt different than it had before, which was only to be expected. He was different now. I'd given him the power to become real again. "Greetings to the Golem of Prague," I said. It paused on the stairs.
"You do not belong here," he told me.
I couldn't tell if he meant here in the basement or in his city. He clarified it for me without my having to ask, so I guess he was still in my head.
"Your help was necessary. You should leave and not ever come back. I won't be so lenient again."
"I'm trapped here," I told him. "As you know very well, I will leave when I can."
"Acceptable," it said.
And it started down the stairs again. It was an awkward-looking movement. Since the stairs weren't wide enough for his feet, the golem leaned back to center his weight over what would have been his heels had he been human. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"There are demons here, the last of the demons in my city."
The Jewish quarter, I thought, not Prague. I hoped he didn't mean Prague. "You've done your job," I told him. "The vampires left here are no villains. They mean no harm to the people here." Yeah, I had a hard time with that last one, too, after I said it. Vampires ate people. It was what they did. But they had brought all the humans here to shelter them, and they were still guarding them to the best of their abilities.
"They are demons," said the golem. "They must be destroyed."
"What about the humans?" I asked.
"They are not my people," he said.
And I felt a cold chill, because I knew what he meant. Vanya had said that not even being Jewish had been enough to save people from the golem. I didn't know what percentage of the people living in Josefov were still Jewish, but if Prague was like the rest of Europe, after the Nazis got through with the city, it was a far smaller percentage than it had been when this had been the only place in Prague the Jewish population could live. And if being Jewish wouldn't save them anyway, it didn't matter, because the golem would kill them all, if Vanya was right. "What will you do to the humans who are not Jewish?" I asked.
"They are not my people," the golem said. "None of the humans are my people. I have no people."
"What if they are Rabbi Love's people?" I asked. It roared at me without a sound. I covered my ears, and it didn't do any good at all. In that sound, I heard a fury built up over centuries of frustration and rage. He didn't speak in words, but I heard him just fine. The rabbi had condemned him to that horrible half-death, burdened him with the need to guard and no means by which to do it. He didn't intend to stop at destroying the vampires or the humans, and being Jewish wasn't going to save anyone from him. I drew a deep breath as the golem took the last step down. "Stop," I said. "Stop moving." And I used the power that allowed me to give orders to the dead. It stopped. It had eaten the magic of all the ghosts we could call here between us, except for Galena. That meant its power came from the dead, and the dead had to listen to me. And then it did to me whatever it had done to Mary's spellcrafting. When I could open my eyes again, the golem had found the vampires. The space between the old furnace and the stairway was too narrow for the golem to get through, though he had pounded the furnace into half the size it had been. So he reached down and began tearing up the stairs.
When we'd removed the anchors that allowed the Manitou of the volcano god to travel, it had been forced back to its original home. I had to do something like that here. But though it was tied to clay with Kabbalistic magic powered by the spiritual energy I'd given him, this Manitou belonged here, in Yosefov. Those weren't the technical terms, I was sure, but I wasn't a mage, and I was running on instinct. The rabbi's problem was that he'd tried to stop it by killing something that wasn't killable. He'd managed to render it almost dead, and to separate it from the physical body that allowed it power. I couldn't kill it. Couldn't even fight it because I was locked in a cage. Couldn't free it. I closed my eyes and stretched with my senses, the ones I'd used to contact Stefan, to find my pack and Adam through our bonds, but this time I directed my attention toward the golem. He ripped at the bottom stair, and it gave with a squeak of nails and cracking wood. I couldn't do anything with the spell crafting that held the golem together, but the energy, the magic he'd stolen from the dead, that was mine. I opened myself up and found Adam. As if he were in the same room with me, I found Adam. He always had my back when I needed him. There was no time to ask for permission, no time to try to communicate anything because the golem had grabbed someone and pulled them out from under the stairs. I couldn't tell who it was because the golem's body was blocking my view. I centered myself, pulled on the connection between Adam and me, and spoke one word. Sunder. I hadn't meant to say that. Sunder means to divide, to part, to separate. I'd meant to try to do what the rabbi had done. I'd planned on saying, die. I'd hoped that with that command, I could force the golem back into the limbo I'd brought it out from. But someone who sounded suspiciously like Coyote whispered that word in my ear as I opened my mouth. I could not touch the Manitou with my magic, because it was not dead. I could not touch the Kabbalistic spells, because that was not my gift. But Kusurik had named me Deathwalker, and the dead obeyed me, no matter how much I tried to ignore that. And it was the power of the dead that held the golem together. My power, the power over the dead, driven by the energy I borrowed from Adam and focused by the single word I'd used, washed through the golem. He staggered, dropped his prey, then turned toward me. He took two quick steps and brought his fist down on the cage. I think we were both surprised when his fist bounced off. It made sense, because the cage had been built with steel, silver, and magic. It had been built to hold werewolves, but I was still surprised he hadn't killed me with a single blow. I reached for Adam a second time, and this time he gave me everything. The first time I'd tried this, he'd had no warning, and I had just taken what I could. This time, he pushed power at me. I could feel his authority built by the belief of the pack that he was the one who could keep them safe as it settled over me. Belief is the most powerful magic of all. He gave me that, trusted me with it. The golem was still waiting for the cage to collapse under his fist, his face not a foot from mine. His fist still on the top of the cage. I reached up and touched his clay flesh with a finger through the mesh. Then I used everything I had, everything I was, and everything Adam had given me when I repeated the word, Sunder. I felt the word hang in the air for a moment. It was like waiting for the rumble of thunder after the flash of lightning. Then the magic of that long-ago rabbi shuddered under the weight of the command. The newer spells the golem had woven himself gave way as the power of the dead tore them to shreds, leaving chaos behind. I'm a mechanic. I fix things that are broken. I turn into a 35-pound coyote. I have powerful friends. But when it comes right down to it, my real superpower is chaos. The golem's clay body fell to the ground and shattered, as though it had been dropped from 100 feet onto rocks. Clay shards bounced off the mesh of my cage, mostly harmlessly. One or two got through, but only one caused me any damage. And for a very long moment, the reek of the mess that Mary had made of her seethe gave way to the smell of spring water,
the kind that bubbles up clear and pure from the earth. And then it was gone, and the whole place smelled of the dead. 14. Mercy. It was hard to look like I'd won when I was still stuck in the stupid cage. Minutes passed. I got a good look at the person the golem had pulled out from the stairway. He was the middle-aged man who had led the other humans. I was still trapped in my cage. Galena tried to help, but her abilities to interact with the real world were limited to rolling heads around. I tried to contact Adam, but my bond had fallen silent again, there, but not there, as if I'd overloaded it. The man moaned a lot. At one point he started to crawl. I don't know where he was going, but he didn't get there. And there was nothing, not anything I could do about him. Nor could I do anything about the sunlight that entered through the broken corner and from the open door at the top of the stairs. I watched, helpless, as it crept closer and closer to the dead who waited under the stairway. The werewolves came just after noon. Adam didn't bother with the broken stairs. He just jumped over the handrail at the top. He stepped over the rapidly rotting body of the man the golem had killed. His bright gold eyes on me, he took a step toward my cage and stopped with a grunt. I felt the magic flare up as it had not for the vampires, the ghosts, or the golem. Galena patted his shoulder and looked concerned for him. He took a half step back. Then he squatted, so his head was level with mine. He didn't say anything, just stared at me with those gold eyes, his hands clenched into fists. If I had been free, I'd have climbed into his lap and buried my face in his shoulder and cried. It was probably better for my dignity that I couldn't do that. I reached out and put my hand against the cage where it was closest to him. "I think Coyote sent me here," I told him. My voice was hoarse from the power I'd used to destroy the golem. "To fix things or make me crazy, it's a toss-up." I was almost certain that the reason I'd chosen Sunder instead of Die was because of Coyote. "I hope he's happy. I think I've ensured that all of the vampires in Prague are dead, except for the four people under the stairs." Suddenly anxious for them, I leaned forward. "They are the good guys, I think, so make sure no one shines any sunlight on them, okay?" He didn't say anything for a while, just put a hand up toward me and then pulled it back with a grimace.
"Who hit you?"
he asked, his voice in that deep place it went when the wolf was riding him. He didn't say anything about the vampires, but I could trust him to take care of it. Had someone hit me? I frowned at him, and he ran his hand down the left side of his face. I'd forgotten about that. "Guccio," I told him. "The pretty vampire. I think he's been disposed of, though. That's what the vampires under the stairs said. It meant they could quit following orders."
"Guccio's dead,"
Adam agreed. So apparently he knew who Guccio was.
"I killed him."
His tone was satisfied, so I expected there was a story that went with that. There would be a lot of time for stories. "It took you a long time to find me," I said. And it had. It had been hours since the golem had died, since a Manitou who powered it had been freed at last to go and be what he was supposed to be, and not what Rabbi Love had turned him into. But my stomach was easing, and my body was starting to believe I was safe. Hearing Adam's voice, velvety soft, was better than medicine for what ailed me.
"Your power draw knocked me off my feet," Adam said. "I was out for an hour. No one could do anything until I was conscious, and it took a while for the bond to start functioning well enough that I could use it to track you."
"Sorry," I said in a small voice.
"My love,"
he said, his voice intent.
"You are welcome to all that I am, all that I have. I would destroy the planet for you. I was even diplomatic for you, which was a bigger sacrifice. A little power drain is nothing."
"An hour," I said. He was a werewolf, and I'd knocked him out for an hour. "You could have died."
"You could have died,"
he said intensely.
"What would I have done then?"
He took a deep breath. When he spoke again, it was in his own voice, despite the gold in his eyes.
You are welcome to anything I have, my love. Martine and Yitka got us to Yosefov, but only after I took them to the park did they remember they'd lost you here. It took Elizaveta the rest of the time to get through the veil spells without pulling them down entirely. She... Libor...
He grimaced again.
We all thought it might be a good thing to see what was inside the invisible wall before we exposed it to the good people of Prague, especially since there were vampires involved. But it took time.
They might want to leave it up a while longer than they are planning, I told him. I think there are a lot of dead bodies here. 60 years worth or more. He sat all the way on the ground. There were fine lines around his eyes, and shadows that told me he was nearly as tired as I felt. People had started to filter down the stairs. Werewolf people, presumably belonging to Libor. Adam told them about the vampires under the stairs and requested politely that someone tell Elizaveta that he needed her. The cage is designed to subdue werewolves, I told him. I'm not being hurt.
When Elizaveta has a moment to spare will be soon enough, Adam told the wolf who'd started up the stairs. So you think Coyote sent you here? Adam asked me. Marsilia is pretty convinced it was a giant plot by Buonarrota to get us to take care of all his problems for him. He's not unhappy to take the credit.
Marsilia? I folded my legs more comfortably and leaned my forehead against the cage. I listened to Adam explain what had happened after they'd found the wrecked car and why he'd brought the people he'd brought. Larry? I said. Seriously? The king of the goblins is Larry?
Someone call my name?
A goblin bounded down the stairs, knelt by Adam, and handed him a bottle of water. He grinned at me, and I saw that there were a few too many teeth in his mouth.
I know, he said to me. What were my parents thinking? Larry. Even worse, though, is that my full name is Lawrence, which makes me sound like a proper wimp.
He had kind eyes.
We're pretty glad to find you more or less in one piece, princess.
Not as happy as I am, I assured him, and he laughed. He turned to Adam.
I'd hoped I might help, but this is witchcraft. I expect Elizaveta can take care of it as soon as she gets done with the wards she's laying to keep out the innocents. She says it will take her a while because something destroyed the ones the previous witch built.
It was the golem, I told them, and the witch is dead. I looked at Larry's shoes. You've been wading through her. She was in love with Guccio, and he was in love with her power.
Dead vampire dust, said Larry thoughtfully.
Dead vampire witch dust, I said.
I think we'll find that she belonged to Buonarrota originally, Adam told me. He had a witch go missing a while back.
Larry got up and went somewhere. I wish that I could drink some of Adam's water. Food would be nice, too.
Was the cage dented when they put you in it?
Adam asked me. I shook my head. That was the golem when it tried to kill me. Adam sat up straighter, and his eyes, which had just gotten back to the dark chocolate color that was more usual for him, brightened again. I killed the golem of Prague for real this time, I told him. After I used him to kill all the vampires. I don't know how many he killed. Lots, I think. Mary figured out how to mass-produce vampires, though I gather they had quite an expiration date. The problem was, he didn't want to stop with the vampires. Your help was the only reason all of the people in the Jewish quarter aren't dead. He looked around the basement. I saw him take in the scattered shards of pottery. He clenched his fists, then released them. It was my fault everyone died, I told him. If I could have figured out a way to kill just Mary, I think Kasurik could have controlled everyone else. But all of those vampires would have known that Mary could make vampires in a couple of weeks instead of years. Stories would have been told. Someone would try it again. Kasurik understood what was at risk. He'd keep quiet, and he'd keep the others who survived quiet. But so many people, and they were people to me whether they were vampires or ghosts, all gone because of me. Adam looked at my face and deliberately let his anger of a moment ago drift away. He pursed his lips.
You beat us. We only killed two people. Lenka, Buonarrota's werewolf, was the first one. He was losing control of her and used us to execute her for him.
He sounded sad.
Then his voice hardened. Guccio was a second. If I'd known he hit you, I'd have taken longer.